All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's Tuesday, November 6th, and this is an NFL podcast. I'm Doug Norrie, and I'm with
Chris Durrell
out there in Canada, but he's about to make a trip to Phoenix for NASCAR. We can talk about that in a second, but this is a football podcast, so we'll get to the NFL first. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site, DFSR.com, if you'd like to type in less keystrokes on your keypad or your keyboard or whatever the hell you call it these days, DFSR.com/deals. We'll get you a free 7-day trial to our projection system. That's going to cover you for the rest of football season. It's going to cover you for NBA as well. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. It's going to get you into premium chat, some premium content, all the stuff that we have offered up on the site. So DFSR.com/deals gets you going. Buddy, week 9. Well, I'm going to get to your NASCAR trip in a second because I think that's important. But week 9 in the NFL. I hate to like start every one of these recaps and be like, well, it was a crazy week. Kind of wasn't all that crazy, I guess, like from a running back standpoint. We could talk about that. But your overall thoughts, like, did anything similarly change your opinion on anything this week? I know it's a kind of a broad question. And then we can get into some of the individual performances and maybe what we can learn. But overall, this week, every week in football is crazy. Did you think this one was kind of status quo, or do you think that like it kind of changed your mind on anything?
It was pretty status quo, but the thing that really got me, I guess, looking at it once everything's over, you know, watching the individual games is like, oh, that changes my perception. But after looking at it as a whole now, going back and checking everything out as a whole, I guess the one thing that stands out to me the most is like my power rankings of the top four teams. Before it was like, well, the Rams are the clear number one team in the league. Well, New Orleans went, they were at home, so it could have been different, you know, if the roles were changed and the Rams were at home. But New Orleans shut down Gurley. He had like 68 yards or 63 yards rushing and only like, I think like 11 or 12 yards receiving. So they completely shut down Gurley. They give up a lot of yards through the air, which that's kind of what the Rams turned to. And that's where the Saints have been down. But the Saints overall look good. They got their big three back in action. Kamara, Thomas, and Breeze all went off together. And that kind of changed my perception of the best teams in the league. Like right now, my rankings are KC, New Orleans, Rams, and New England would be my top four. I wanted to ask you, what is your top four? Because I think those four teams are clearly ahead of the rest of the league right now. And that's kind of it. The Saints are close to the number one, but I still think the Chiefs are number one for me.
Chiefs are number one for me. You know, it's crazy, and I know this doesn't make a lot of sense coming after the week. I'd still take the Rams over the Saints. I know they lost. I know there's. I get that part of it. It's one game, and we had the best way to determine some of these matchups. So I'm totally and completely and 100% aware of that. So no one need to like flame me in the comments about like not understanding that fact. And the context behind this. Now it's gonna. The context behind this matters. Maybe it's just more of a tie for me then, because I think the home field advantage mattered. I think the Rams did get screwed out of a couple calls that kind of did tilt the game a little bit and made the overall score look a little further away than it really should have been. I know the Saints ended up winning by 10. That to me struck me more as possibly just a one score game. Like if you take away some of the calls that kind of happened near the end of the game. I think on the season, I think I'd still take the Rams. Like I think if we walk this game back into LA, the Rams win this game. I don't know. Am I crazy? I think that. I actually think the Patriots. It's funny the Patriots might be number two by themselves. Like this is a team that struggled at the beginning of the year. They've had no issues. This is again, it's year infinity with the Patriots where something looks wrong. Brady's messed up. The personnel is weird. This team, it just like doesn't matter. It's like, oh, yeah, you know what? Run all the running backs down? F it, dude. Cordero Patterson's the running back. He's good. You know, 6 yards a carry. Yeah. You're good. James White, like, just catches a bunch of balls out. Oh, Chris Hogan stinks now? No problem. We have Josh Gordon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the Patriots, it's just every single year with this, they just need to get to, like, week 9 and make all their adjustments. And now they just look, again, like a great team. Like, I think the Chiefs are still clearly number one, but for me, it's very close in that group of three afterwards, where it could probably just change week to week going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And even watching Twitter while that New England game was on, people talking about Brady washed up. He had like 6 straight incompletions and, oh, he's done. And then boom, there he goes. He takes off. And like they came into the week winning 5 straight. They've now won 6 straight. So yeah, they're in full mode. And some of the guys that were supposed to be there for them making an impact start of the season are no longer there. And it just blew me away that, oh, we'll just throw Cordero Patterson in there. And oh, look at him. He just rushes down the field like nothing, scores a touchdown when James White gets hurt. And then they even use him in the second half when James White comes back. So just crazy. So I agree with you that it's KC 1 and then the next 3 are, it's pretty darn close to me.
All right, let's go through some of these quarterbacks. I have some questions for you on your opinions on some quarterback play for me has not changed. I mean, we get the guys who are pretty much similar week to week. We get the Matt Ryans, and I don't know, Drew Brees is basically the same if they're going to be throwing the ball. But a guy, okay, so Patrick Mahomes. What do we do with Mahomes at this point? I've been low on his projection just about every single week, so I'm going to take the full loss on him. I was just calling people's reaction to him just completely crazy to start the year. Full L for me on Mahomes, no problem. And I get so worried about playing this guy every week because, I mean, this week they're 17-point favorites. I just don't even, you know, I was writing up, starting to write up the cash game picks for this week, and I'm looking at Mahomes, and I'm looking at Hunt, and I'm like, yes, they're amazing. Yes, they just score a gajillion fantasy points every single week. He does it on, like, no attempts. 32 attempts this week, 27 fantasy points, easily the lowest of the top scorers. I mean, what do we do with projecting the Chiefs at this point? Because it's like they don't even need a lot of touches. They score so many points. I'm just all thrown off. I'm all thrown off about what to do with this team, especially if they can consider it safe for something like cash games going forward.
Yeah, like you said, he's only once thrown for 40 attempts. That was against Denver, I believe in like week 4. He had 45 attempts. Other than that, he hasn't hit the 40 mark once. But he's got 8 straight games of 300-plus yards. He's got 4 straight games of 3-plus touchdowns, and he's done that 7 times this season. And some of these games, like there was the Denver game, the San Francisco game, Cincinnati, and then the Denver the second time, they were big favorites. I mean, not as big favorites as this week, but they were big favorites in those games, and he's still hitting value every single week. Even with his price going up, it's absolutely crazy. He brings so much value to these other guys in the lineup. Tyreek Hill, even Hunt, throwing him the ball like that 50. I think he had a 50-yard reception, was his first touchdown this past week. He, you know, it's hard to maybe put him in lineups this week with his, you know, his price gone up a little bit again in a 17-point favorites. I'd rather lean Hunt, I guess, in this matchup over Mahomes this week, but it does make projections hard. I can't imagine what you and James go through, you know, even Sunday morning kind of thing, even Saturday afternoon type thing, trying to get a projection in for him when they're such huge favorites, and, you know, you wouldn't think that the game script is going to go very good for him.
Well, the other thing that like that I found that I'm just like, well, this isn't sustainable. And like the thing that I've thought two things are completely unsustainable for him this season, and he's been able to basically sustain both. One is the yards per attempt. Like the yards per attempt, he and Goff are easily lapping the field on this stat. I guess Matt Ryan's not too far away from them, but he's over 9 yards per attempt. Goff's at 9.61, and then the touchdowns at 29 touchdowns. You know, as the season's gone on, I'm like, you can't just continue this many yards through the air on this few attempts. And then he also just can't continue this many touchdowns on this few attempts. And it just keeps sustaining week after week after week. So that's the other problem, too. When you look at historical numbers on some of these stats, the yards per attempt, we're starting to stare at guys who just have not really done this before. And it's the incremental change in our projections is on this kind of thing, is almost always going to be too slow. I'll just admit it. Like, I was talking about this with basketball the other night, too. It's like when there's been crazy stuff that you just don't really see, especially if you compare the guy to themselves, but it's just you have to change these things incrementally, and if something's an outlier, the incremental changes usually aren't going to be fast enough to fully catch up. And I recognize that's probably just more of a problem with our system. What about some of these other quarterbacks though? Like, we saw Mullins come in for San Francisco. Fitzpatrick kind of like doesn't matter who's quarterbacking Tampa Bay at this point. They just lose, but the quarterback throws for a ton of yards and points. How much do you trust these guys going forward? Their prices are still kind of down. Has anything changed your opinion about them after, you know, pretty big fantasy weeks?
Yeah, I do like Fitzpatrick. I mean, he's going to get the yards, like you said. And the thing that wasn't so tilting was Fitzpatrick. He was 16% owned in FanDuel tournaments, and he was in the winning lineups. But the other side of it is what was really tilting. I mean, like I remember you said in chat, imagine having Carolina 35 points at half. Would you want to play their quarterback? Well, especially when that quarterback's Cam Newton.
That quarterback had accounted for 100% of their touchdowns in the season. Like, he had not been – he'd either thrown them or run them himself. Like, he was – for every single touchdown Carolina had scored this season on the offensive end, Cam had a part in it until, I mean, Alex Armour.
Crazy week.
Curtis Samuel. Are you fucking kidding me with these guys? Like, I was as close to breaking something as – I usually don't get too crazy mad on a certain outcome. And the Armour – followed by Curtis Samuel touchdowns for Carolina, had me pretty close to the break. But I know you've been a huge Cam believer, though. I mean, does this game affect your decision-making on him going forward, just in terms of like having a high upside fantasy quarterback?
Not really. He still got there on FanDuel for sure with 21.2 points. He still hit cash value for me, like 2.5 times value. So I was pretty happy with it for cash at the end of the day. It was pretty, I was sweating pretty hard, you know, going into the second half there, but he did end up getting those 2 touchdowns and 250 yards passing, and he still rushed for 33 yards. He picked up some rush yards in the second half there. So not really. He still pretty much does it all. His shoulder injury, I mean, he's got that new, I think that was 2 years ago, NFL changed that questionable tag thing. So everyone in the league is pretty much questionable. So I never really worry about that with Cam. They kind of, he's kind of like the Peterson. They don't really run him a lot in practice, you know, work him a whole bunch. So they kind of give him that time off there. So not really worried about him that much going forward. That kind of seemed like an outlier game. Like that Curtis Samuel run, I was watching NFL Network last night, and for him to go that 32, 33 yards, he ran 105 yards. And yeah, there was like 10 missed tackles.
It was unbelievably maddening. I never root for guys to get tackled like that, because I usually don't care. And I'm like, oh, tackle this guy. Like, oh, come on. What are we doing here? Do not let this guy score. Any other quarterback play, before we get into some of their positions, quarterback play stand out to you from week 9?
No, that was pretty much it. Everything else kind of worked out, I guess, the way we had planned. You could say, like, Goff, like I said, they shut down Gurley, so Goff ended up throwing almost 400 yards and 3 touchdowns, and that usually happens when teams really put an emphasis. You get those good teams that are good against the run that are going to game plan against Gurley. Goff's going to get his. I was kind of surprised to see Kupp maybe not at 100% get back in there and crush it. Other than that, last night, Marcus Mariota looked pretty good. I mean, he didn't attempt 30 passes. He was 21 for 29, but 72% of his passes, and I guess the biggest thing of the last night's game was Tennessee just shutting Dallas down, shutting Ezekiel Elliott down, so that was something to see as well.
Yeah, Dallas is just a joke. They need to fire the coach. They're clueless. They don't know what they're doing on offense. They're playing a game like it's still like the mid-90s. I don't know what their plan is. They don't seem to have a plan. They bring in Cooper. They're still just running, you know, run, pass, punt kind of bullshit, and they just can't seem to innovate in any clear way. And I get that you have like a joke of a GM and a complete joke of a coach. At some point, something's going to need to change. They have the talent that this kind of game surely shouldn't be happening for them, and they just really can't do it. On the running back tip here, though, you really couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You were fine. No, didn't matter which combination of expensive running backs you paid. I mean, I guess Gurley kind of didn't get you there, but these other expensive running backs this week, Hunt, Kamara, McCaffrey, even James Conner, in arguably the worst matchup of the group, they all got there on their fantasy price. Is this that Hunt, Kamara, McCaffrey, Conner group, and then I'm going to keep Gurley in there as well. Is this just the group going forward? A lot of these guys are in great spots again this week, specifically Hunt, Kamara, and Gurley as favorites or thin spread high over under games. Where do you kind of rank these guys going forward? And are we in a situation now where when it comes to running back, we just need to kind of bend over backwards to spend up for the three of the most expensive guys?
Yeah, paying up for running back sure seems to be the way to go. And the thing that stood out to me the most when I was running like my running back touch share sheet is that there was only, after a week where we've seen 7 running backs with 20-plus carries, we're back down to, there was only 3 running backs that had 20-plus carries last week. And, I mean, Frank Gore was one of them. I didn't expect it really from James Conner. His performance really stood out to me the most this week on the good side of things, just because he's had, since he played Baltimore back at the end of September, where he only had 9 carries for 19 yards, coach came out and said we need to get him the ball more. He's had 19 or more carries in 4 straight weeks and 100 plus yards and 6 touchdowns in the last 4 weeks. So he's been really impressive, and doing that against Baltimore in Baltimore was really impressive. So, I mean, they're not worried about Lev Bell coming back or not. It sounds like he probably is. That kind of tweet that he sent out yesterday, goodbye Miami or whatever the hell he said on his Twitter account there. So he's probably coming back, but I can see them just putting him on the bench, you know, giving him 5 to 10 touches a week. That's about it for, you know,
right.
The coach kind of came out and ranted a little bit about him, but ranking these running backs going forward, I think you still got to have Gurley number 1 by far. He's right behind Mahomes for me in the MVP voting at this time. Hunt really matters on game flow. If they're going to be up, he's going to get his carries. He does catch the ball very well, don't get me wrong there, but it seems like in shootouts, it's more Kelce Hill that they like to get more involved, so I really like him this week. And then you got Melvin Gordon. He came back. He looked good. And then you got Alvin Kamara, who just, I mean, he had 19 carries this week. Just Ingram, after that game, he came back. It's like they just wanted to make him feel good, like he was a part of the team. And then they've just been kind of shutting him out, and Kamara just looks amazing. Someone compared him to Lev Bell, just with his patience behind the line, that one run where he just kind of like stopped and waited for everything to set up and then ran it in for a touchdown. It was just pretty much amazing. Barkley, I think now for me, and even Ezekiel Elliott a little bit, just because you mentioned the coaching stuff with Dallas, but Barkley, he just seems like he's at the top of the next tier, just because the Giants are like never winning a game.
Yeah, they stink.
They're always behind. He's good. He's more of a guy I look at on DraftKings, just because he's going to get 5 to 10 targets every single week.
Yeah, no. So Kamara, I was, you know, spent some time looking at these running backs this morning, trying to decide what to look for this week. I still think I'm with you on Gurley. I think he's a 10-point favorite at home. You know, the fact that he actually didn't even touch the ball a crazy amount last week probably only helps him. He's still very much just the only plan. You know, with Kamara, the good thing you'd like to see about Kamara is in leverage spots, he is just the guy. Like, they, you know, he was the goal line back when they were down and close. He scored a 1-yard touchdown run. If they're playing from behind, he's going to be the guy. But if they're playing from ahead and the game's close, he's going to be a guy. And I think that's the key. Ingram did fumble last week. I thought that was going to be the end, the last we saw of him after he fumbled. He did end up coming back and played one more series after that. But the fact that, because the only thing that concerns me is a little bit, is that Kamara's running back touches were like 41 to 34 on a snap count to Ingram. That is easily the worst among this group, like the Hunt, Gordon kind of group that you want to see. And they've also made it clear that when he's on the field, their goal is to get him the ball. And when the game is close or they want to maintain something, he's going to be the guy as well. So I think he's probably still a little underpriced. In terms of 20-yard rushing games, Gordon has not had a 20-yard rushing game yet this season.
No.
I don't know what to make of that. Austin Eckler is still there, but the snap count wasn't an issue really for him last week. I don't know if they eventually could get him there, but the fact that he hasn't touched over it yet this season has me a little concerned. And actually, one guy that I think is so funny, Nick Chubb. Man, I'll hand it to the Browns. They stay consistent in two ways. They lose, and their running back gets a lot of carries, no matter if they're winning or losing. Like, the guy carried 22 times, they're getting killed. If that's the case, Chubb seems like, is Chubb like almost close to an elite touchback, just because if the guy can carry 22 times when you're losing by double digits, what happens if the Browns, God forbid, they end up winning a game?
And he's cheap too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could see him with upside of, you know, 25 to 30 touches. If they're ever gonna, I don't think they're gonna. It's gonna happen this week against Atlanta. But again, Atlanta's been, you know, not great. I think they're bottom five in the league against the rush. All fantasy points, rushing yards, all those kind of things put together. And I kind of mentioned it a little bit in chat last week, that the fact that the new offensive coordinator was the former running backs coach was really good for him. And they want to get him the ball. I mean, they got the GM went out and traded high to say, okay, you're going to play Nick Chubb now. This is the guy we want to be our lead back. So the fact that he's got 18 and 22 carries, and now it gets probably his best matchup out of the last three, four weeks for sure. And at his price, I just think he's still got cash value against Atlanta this week.
That's what I mean. I wrote him up as a cash game play. I think you need to consider him. I think there in the NFL, where the ball can bounce right, you know, can bounce in your direction every once in a while, the fact that if any way the Browns could just get up early against this team, I think we could see 25 carries out of this guy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, if the floor is 20 carries when you're losing, then I think you have pretty significant upside. Let's finish this off with some of the receivers. Cordarrelle Patterson counts as a receiver. I don't think it's going to end up mattering for him, because I think Sony Michel is going to come back next week, though. Nice on him to be able to figure out that, like, hey, other teams that couldn't figure out a way to ever keep you, we'll turn him into something that, like, looks like he has fantasy and real world relevance. In terms of the targets, really kind of saw a drop off in overall target share this week when it came to the wide receivers. Michael Thomas had the huge game. No other receiver topped over 12 targets. What anything stand out to you from a receiver standpoint? Not a ton of big games through the air outside of Michael Thomas.
Maurice Harris for Washington kind of stood out for me.
Don't even get me started with that guy, because we were so bullish on his targets for like two consecutive weeks, and he didn't do a thing. So I'm watching him catch balls, and I just was so tilted, because I was like, where was this like the 2 weeks we played this guy? Yep. Like, minimum thing. Anyway, keep going. We have more. I mean, do you think that's sustainable? Because I'm tilted on the previous stuff, that I'm just like, this is a one and done kind of thing.
No. The couple other things that stood out to me, especially at the top tier, first of all, Julio Jones finally scored a touchdown. Hooray Hey-o. For that.
Yeah.
It was an amazing touchdown, too. Like, he caught it on a screen, and then he broke it, and then he broke a tackle, I think it was like 6 yards in, and he carried that guy to the end zone. Like, his will to want to score that touchdown was pretty amazing to watch. And then the other thing was Antonio Brown. Just, I mean, he only caught 5 of his 11 targets, 45%. So he's still hovering around that 50% catch rate this season. Is just... it's pretty tilting. And on those 11 targets, 5 catches, he only had 42 yards. He did score a touchdown to kind of help you get there. I was kind of on him as a GPP pivot, same with Julio a little bit. But then the other guy, Thielen, just didn't come close to breaking the record. Detroit really put the hammer down and double covered him like pretty much every time. He only seen 7 targets, 22 yards. He did score that touchdown, which was nice to see if you were using a lot of Thielen last week as well. So him and Brown kind of disappointed a little bit. But I guess, you know, going back to the running back side of things for a minute, a little bit tilting as well. I know I seen you in chat, is Dalvin Cook. Didn't really know what was going to happen all week, and all of a sudden he comes back. He breaks that 70-yard run. He is obviously 100% healthy. He touched, I believe it was 22.07 miles an hour on that run. I was looking, checking out the next-gen stats. That is the fastest any player has broke on, I think it was over a 20-yard run or catch-and-run kind of thing in the season. That's the highest speed anyone has reached this whole entire season. So
I couldn't believe I think he's 100% healthy. It was a miracle that he didn't score a touchdown. He looked like he was just completely gone. They got the right angle on him at the last second, but I thought for sure. Well, the thing with Minnesota was, the problem was, if you played Minnesota in fantasy, which we did, we had some Thielen, some Latavius Murray this week, the Kyle Rudolph as well. It wasn't even that the offense was bad. They just couldn't get the ball. Like, the Detroit completely controlled the time of possession, like 35 to, it was some crazy number. Detroit held the ball forever. It didn't do a thing with it. Mostly they're just getting sacked and then running the play clock down to one before they run the next play, before Stafford would get killed again. So it wasn't even like the overall offense was bad. They just never touched the ball. They couldn't get enough snaps in to really hit value. Actually, and while we're on that game, what do we make of Detroit here? I was bullish on the wide receiver core with Galladay and Jones. They just couldn't have looked worse. I mean, is this the situation where do we want to be overly correct on some of these guys? Jones was decent. Galladay was non-existent. They threw the running backs a lot. What do we do? Did the Golden Tate thing end up not mattering? Is the offensive line too bad? Like, what do we do with the Detroit thing? They looked about as bad as you can ever look in a football game.
See, and I think a lot of people are going to see that recency bias and maybe avoid those two receivers going forward, especially against a tough Chicago defense. Chicago hasn't been that – they've been better against the run than the pass. And then the other thing that stood out to me when breaking that down and saying, why did this happen – It kind of seems like an anomaly for me, because Detroit's offensive line, when looking at like adjusted sack rate and stuff like that, they ranked top 10. Their offensive line was top 10 in the league going into that game. So the fact they gave up 10 sacks was just crazy to me that actually happened. I mean, Minnesota, they don't really need to send linebackers to get to the quarterback. They have a pretty darn good defensive line, edge rushers to get in there and pressure the quarterback. But Detroit was, like I said, a top 10 team in adjusted sack rate, offensive line on the season. So that, I think, maybe for a GPP spot, you can jump on Marvin Jones and Kenny Galladay, whose prices are going to go down. I haven't really checked. $6,200 and $5,800 on FanDuel this week. I think they're going to be lower owned just because they burned so many people last week.
Yeah, Galladay, I hate to like be the, oh, if only this one thing had happened, this well would have been better. Galladay, Stafford just flat out missed him on a go route.
That was bad.
And he just threw the ball over the wrong shoulder and out of bounds. Like, he was wide open, that even a ball underthrown would have probably had him in the end zone, because there was just nobody behind. He had broken free behind the D-back, and Stafford just missed him because he was sort of like rolling out. Again, these things can happen to anybody in football, so I hate to like put that onto his projection. Really, the bigger problem with Galladay was he just didn't see any targets. Stafford was really never
no time
his way. Yeah, no, and that's the other thing too. No time. So I'm a little worried going in. Like, I wish this would be a week where they were just playing like even a middle tier defense, I could talk myself back into it about not overreacting. The Bears are just such a good defense that that's my only issue with them. By the way, I'm gonna switch gears here for one second to talking about. A crazy game. Did you see Mike Evans' stat line for this week?
Oh, that was the last thing I had on my list here.
Okay,
ten targets. We'll end it on this. One catch.
10 targets, 1 catch, 16 yards. I'm forgetting the name of the cornerback. Washington. You talking off mind of who was covering him. But Evans, what do we do with a game like that? Obviously, it's kind of the opposite of these guys we're talking about. Great target share and just simply couldn't even do a thing with it. Is he a guy do you feel comfortable like keeping a bullish projection on, or have we just seen too much inconsistency in terms of Evans's ability to complete? Because this has been sort of an issue for him for his career. He sometimes just goes through stretches where he can't convert a target.
No, that's I talked about it earlier in the season. While it was kind of surprising that he'd never had over a 60% catch rate in his career, he's always sitting around that 50 to 55, 56% range, and he was like at 74% in the season. Like, do we use this guy in cash games? Right. Well, over the last few weeks, he's really regressed back to his mean. Like what we've seen over the course of his career, he's back down to 60.3% for the season. He's got the yards. He's got four touchdowns this year, so that's kind of been down a little bit. I think he's GPP only going forward. I mean, they're in a high passing offense, so the upside is most definitely there, but the downside is also there. And that really kind of sends me in a direction where some of these receivers who are up and down like that, you can really take advantage of the other receiver on the other side and use him as a pivot away from some of the high ownership guys, the names that we know, like Mike Evans, for instance. Adam Humphreys was in the winning lineup that I'm looking at on FanDuel this week at 0.8%, and he scored 25 fantasy points because Evans just couldn't catch a ball.
Yeah. Look, by the way, this is what's going to happen when you switch quarterbacks back and forth during the season. Like, it's very hard to maintain consistency in a passing game when you just can't decide on who your quarterback is. And it's a sign of a bad team to not be able to figure this out. I get it. Tampa Bay is not a good team. Evans has struggled with this stuff. By the way, the cornerback was James Bradbury. I was blanking on his name. Yeah. Like, Evans is he's still among the top 10 in terms of overall targets this year, but he's easily got the worst. I take that back. He has not easily the worst. Actually, A.J. Green and Antonio Brown have worse conversion rates, although if you look in the short term, that's going to be Evans. Yeah, no, I'm with you. This is a thing where Tampa Bay, you're going to have huge upside on these guys because there are going to be games where it all gets kind of put together, and then you're going to get the one catch on 10 targets is really something you don't see every day. All right, but you are going to Phoenix this week. Tell us real quick about what you are doing down there. It's having to do with NASCAR, but just give the podcast listener a quick update on what your plans are for Phoenix.
Yeah, heading out on Thursday. It couldn't be soon enough. It's snowstorm here in Saskatchewan right now, so can't wait to get to sunny and 75-plus degree weather. Heading down to the Phoenix race this weekend. It's a triple header, so we got the trucks, the Xfinity, and the Cup Series. It's the last elimination race, so the 8 drivers down for the Cup Series. It's going to be 8 drivers going down to 4 going to the final race next weekend, so it's going to be pretty exciting there. They just revamped the track and put like $180 million in the last 2 years, so they changed things up a little bit. But me and my family, we all got hot passes, so we're going to be spending the time down in the pits all 3 days for the trucks, Xfinity, and Cup cars. So I'm going to try and do, for my NASCAR this week, I'm going to do a video just kind of going over some picks, just live from the track type thing. So it's going to be a lot of fun and pretty excited about it, and I may never come home.
Yeah, good for you, man. NASCAR's really hooked it up for you, and it's really just a testament about when you put time into something, other people do notice. In this case, NASCAR is the one that originally reached out to Chris and said, hey, we want to have you start coming to some of our races, and that was because nothing – well, no, this is going to take this to the spirit of head – because nothing else except you work your ass off doing stuff for NASCAR. So it is because of something else, and this is just – it's always been a proof positive to me that if you just keep grinding on something and put your name out there – people will take notice, and then when that happens, you get to reap the benefit. So, buddy, enjoy Phoenix. I will talk to you again probably next week. Well, I'll talk to you online the whole week, but we will talk to you again next week. Enjoy Phoenix. Anyone else can enjoy your week of football. We'll be back again for the Cash Game podcast on Thursday and then Game by Game podcast on Friday. Buddy, I'll see you on TV in Arizona.
Green screens, everyone. Let's go.